football on off the ball.
Mulroney's been nowhere near it. You just look at some of his interviews. He's talking about, I'm starting to catch fire now, I'm starting to feel good again. You're going, it's July, like, what?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Word on the Street, where every week we take a sporting topic or event, something dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public to see what they think. It has been an historic week for women's football, with Athlone Town reaching round two of the Champions League qualifiers, becoming a serious international contender a mere 5 years after their establishment. So here is episode 15, European Nights. So I'm very happy to announce that we have Rachel back in the studio.
Hello, Eve. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. So you have been very busy the last kind of week. You're at All Together Now.
I was at All Together Now. The voices come back. I hope it's not too gravelly for the listeners there. If this was 2 days ago, it would have just been a mime, you know.
Because you're just singing along, I guess, for 3 days straight.
That's the problem. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, are you very shook? And I'm like, that's not the problem. It's just the voice is gone. You know, you'd Fontaine's Friday, CMAT Saturday, and Nelly Furtado on Sunday.
I've seen CMAT before. I'm seeing her again in December. Very excited. She's my favourite, I think, of these kind of new generation of Irish artists.
Yeah, she's iconic. There was someone in the crowd had like CMAT Marukdar on as a sign. It was like, yeah, that's it. Get her in.
Because you weren't there for work. You were just there for fun.
I was just there for fun. Yeah, I actually made a statement to say, if you see me approaching the work tent, intervene. You know, if you see a microphone in my vicinity, take it away from me.
Very good. Because last week I was working a lot because I was at...
Sorry about that.
Sorry, no. I had a lovely time working because I was at Athlone Town Stadium on Wednesday and on Saturday for their two Champions League fixtures. And listen, you give me a podcast. You say, what are we going to do the podcast this week on? And I very, very, in my very unbiased opinion, I said we should do it on Athlone Town because they've become the first team, Irish women's team, since 2011 to reach the second round of the Champions League qualifiers.
Which is crazy. Like, I don't know much. I'm going to preface this episode by saying I don't know a whole lot about women's soccer, but even in researching this, I'm an Athlone FC fan now. Consider me joined up.
We're very, very happy to have you. I think what particularly draws not only me, who's from Athlone, but I think what's drawn a lot of people kind of even nationally over the past week into Athlone's story is just how young a club they are. Now, as a whole, Athlone have a very long and storied footballing history, particularly with European competitions. But the women's team were only established in 2020. So in a 5 year turnaround to go from not having a senior women's team to competing at, you know, the highest level of European football, it kind of defies belief. It's astonishing.
Yeah, even when I was looking it up earlier, it was like, yeah, we're going to get underway this year in 2020, which is obviously the COVID year. So I think it was supposed to start earlier. They didn't end up having games until like August, September.
Yeah.
And we'll use these couple of years to find our place in the league. No, they didn't need that time at all.
Because even if you think, oh, you know, we'll find a couple of years, like the 2022 FAI Cup final was between Shelburne and Athlone. I remember I was there and we didn't win that one. But I do remember being in the crowd that day in a freezing Tala stadium. Like, it was, I can't emphasize enough, it was the coldest I've been in ages. But I just remember sitting down there and thinking, this just wasn't a thing when I was a child growing up. You know, like, yeah, obviously the men's team was around, but, you know, for young girls growing up in Athlone now, and you saw that over the last kind of week, they can see themselves represented on the pitch at such a high level. And it's astonishing that the journey they've taken. So I suppose just to explain perhaps to Rachel, but also to people listening, what it means, like I'd say they're in the round two qualifier. So basically for the Women's Champions League, Athlone Town have, I suppose, qualified for the qualifiers through the champions path from winning the league last season. So three rounds of qualifying to get into the Women's Champions League proper. Their first round had a semi-final against Cardiff City, which they won 4-0. then a final against Agram, which they won 3-0, which means they now progress to round two, which they are playing. And I'm going to try and pronounce this team's
looking
name
forward to this
correctly. You're not going to know whether I do or not, unless do you speak Icelandic?
Not well.
Not well. So they are playing Icelandic champions. Okay, here we go. Breivablink, I think. And they're playing them in the Netherlands on August 27th. And I think they have, another game after that. And then they can either move on to round three, should they win, or they can drop down to like the Europa League qualifiers. So there's only like one more game to get through, I think, until there's a really strong possibility of staying in Europe for a really long time.
And so if they win that match, they'd be guaranteed like a couple of group stage matches instead of just being knocked out.
I think this Breivik game is quite an important one. There might be another game after that, but this is the big one. And it's the first time they'll have played in Europe outside of Ireland.
Oh, exciting.
Because that's what all the girls were saying, you know, when I was chatting to them after the match, all the players. It's going to be such a great bonding experience for them. Because although they're on a team and a lot of them have been there since 2020, there's a lot of new signings being brought in. So I guess, you know, you play a team sport yourself, like how important it is to have that sort of camaraderie and teamwork.
Yeah, but like, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these players work as well, don't they?
Yeah, they're a semi-professional team. I think you're gearing up now to talk about Athlone's Kaylee Shine.
I am.
So she's been in the squad since 2020, and I talked to her after the match, the Agram match on Saturday, and just, I'm going to let her explain what it means to be a part of this team.
Yeah, I suppose for myself, I work full time, so I'm trying to get my own bit of recovery in, but I know the girls, they went out to Cousin Point, done a bit of swimming, got a bit of food, and recovered their legs a little bit. Myself, I was kind of just sitting around all day, but you know, getting any type of stretching in, anything we could. It's such a short period of time back in training then 2 days later, and taking it easy enough, I suppose, but we have to keep the intensity in training as well. Even though it's not a full blown training session, we still have to, you know, keep the intensity that we're going to bring into the match today, which we did.
I mean, to be working full time while playing Champions League football, try and apply that to the men's game, which is obviously far more advanced than the women's. It's incomprehensible.
Yeah, imagine putting that down in your annual leave form. No reason for taking leave. Oh, just playing the Champions League.
Yeah, casually. Yeah, it goes to show really the dedication and the passion that these players that from that original establishing squad in 2020 have. You know, I'm working full time while I'm writing my thesis, and I'm finding it incredibly difficult, and I complain about it all the time. I can't imagine working full time and then having the pressure of like an entire town on you. But in fairness, I think what these players are feeling is the support of this entire town, and it comes across so clearly.
Yeah, and even from you, obviously being from Athlone, you've got that passion. But from a lot of the vox pops that you recorded with people during the week, you can tell it's so evident that the entire town is behind this team.
It is. I mean, and we could see that with the attendance figures, which were remarkable. And with the fact that going around town, people knew about the game, which sounds odd. Obviously, you know, your local team is playing in a European fixture. But it wouldn't be the case that people would be stopping in town and chatting about the football. You know, it's usually, you know, your Premier League teams that you support. So to have that level of support for a local team is fantastic. And what I wanted to really get at in this podcast is the development of this team from their establishment in 2020 to where they are now. And my best friend from home, Angelina De Rosa, she is living in Canada now, actually, isn't everyone? If you're not in Canada, you're in Australia, or you're just recently back from Australia, as is the case with Rachel. But she was part of that original 2020 squad. And I just asked her kind of what her memories were of that time. In sort of, and then how it developed. So she said, I want to preface this by saying I don't have a bad word to say about anyone or anything from that time, because everyone involved really tried their best to progress the team in every way and to make things equal to what the men's team were afforded. I remember at the time we weren't paid and we had to find our own sponsor for our gear or pay for it ourselves, and we had to make our own way to matches. It was mostly local girls on the team at the time, but a lot of girls travelled from far away for training, which is hard to do when you're not getting paid for it. They were reimbursed for fuel, but that doesn't pay the bills. You had to keep the 9-to-5. So it's that sort of, yeah, it's not the club's fault that they just didn't have the money or the funds to support the girls in that way. But at the same time, it requires such strength and dedication and passion to continue fighting for something when you really are doing a lot of it on your own.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why they've been so successful? Because it's not like they were invited in, oh, we'll give you this really generous package, you can come and play for us and we're going to dominate. It was probably like, we're starting a new club here, we'd love you to come in, but you're going to have to work for it. And you can create a culture when something's new, and Athlone have obviously gotten that spot on. But it's not that they had lots of money, lots of resources straight away. So they're in it for all the right reasons. And I know they've got new owners now, you were speaking to during the week.
Yes. So it's a very, I think he likes to be referred to as the chairman. But he's very recently come in. His name is Nick Giannati. He's from California, sunny California. And he's very experienced within kind of the senior levels of different European football clubs. He's involved in Plymouth Argyle. He's recently involved in Larne up in the north, which is unusual. But he was very involved over the past week with these fixtures. He hosted a town forum, which I went to. And I think people can be very cynical with Athlone Town because there's been a long history of owners perhaps not having the best interests of the club in mind. And a lot of people are quite cynical, which is understandable. You know, there was a man in the forum who had said, I'm boycotting. I don't go to fixtures anymore. And the new owner, Nick Giannati, he asked, well, are you going to come to tonight's game or this afternoon's game? You know, Athlone Town women against Agram, Champions League round one qualifier semi-final. Or sorry, final. It really is the biggest European game in many years. And this man just said, nope. So there's a real deep and lingering sense of distrust. But there's a kind of a new generation of fans now who are getting behind this this new ownership.
It's kind of a testament to the new owners. I think they've kind of marketed the club a lot better, because last season we won the league, but even at the Master we won the league, we didn't fill it.
So compare that to, I think, the official attendance for both games against Cardiff and then against Agram was 1,916, exactly the same for both, which is really funny.
Is that capacity?
That is basically capacity. I mean, I think there's around 2,000 seated seats in the stadium, which was built 18 years ago now. So that, I mean, you could hear it. The energy was incredible. And I know that, you know, when you don't have a really long culture of a team existing, it can be difficult to get those sort of figures. But I mean, they came out and it wasn't just like, you know, there's this kind of stigma around women's football that it's friendlier, you know, and it's for kids and it's for families. And there was loads of kids and families there, which is fantastic to see. But there were also, you know, lads with big drums banging and giving out to the referee and doing, you know, chants and everything like that. The atmosphere, I think, scared the shit out of the opposition a little bit, which is great.
There's a bit of a history with European football in Athlone Town that I didn't know. So do you think some people were reliving those heydays?
Very much so. I mean, like, the one that everyone talks about is 50 years ago this year, which is Athlone versus AC Milan. Now, I'll show you this later on, Rachel, but have you ever seen the picture of the AC Milan players arriving in Athlone?
No.
It's fantastic. So these, you know, are Italian. This is 1975. They're wearing these Italian kind of superstars, and they're wearing their fancy shoes and their nice suits, and they got off the bus at the old ground, St. Mel's Park, right into a big muddy puddle.
Welcome to Athlone, baby.
Welcome to Athlone. And they drew 0-0. You know, they didn't get battered by, you know, by AC Milan. Listen, admittedly, they lost the second leg. But when people in Athlone think about the European history, it's that picture that gets brought up, and that's the one abiding memory, which is great. But it wasn't hugely successful, and it didn't really lead to anything. Whereas I think now they're seeing what the women are doing and how this can really progress into something real and substantial and isn't, you know, isn't in black and white, if you get me. It's something that's happening right here and right now.
Yeah, and when you're on the pitch, the players, like, we've heard it from them themselves, they can feel that 12th man getting behind them.
Oh, so much so. And I think that's because there's no distance between the fans and the players. A lot of them are from Athlone. Or if they're from, you know, there's a lot of American players in the squad, but they're all living in town. They're all living together. Actually, Kelly Brady and Maddie Gibson, I think, are flatmates. You know, so there's such a huge connection built, and Kayleigh Shine kind of expanded on that as well.
Yeah, I suppose the crowd there today alone showed what type of support that we have walking around town, the amount of people that would bring it up. And I think we're bringing football back, especially for any of the older football players that were around back in the St. Mel's day. They used to get thousands at their games, and to have a full crowd here again now today, it's amazing. And we really do appreciate all the support, and we hope that they can come out to any of the league games as well, because they're a big help to us. They're a 12th man on the pitch.
Yeah.
And as well as having local players, a good few local managers. The current manager is a local Athlone man. Does that happen often? Because I associate football or soccer with maybe superstars or transfers compared to GAA, where you're playing for your local team. Is it a bit unusual that you've got such a local thread coming through this team? Or do you think that's because it's new?
I feel like in League of Ireland, it's not as unusual as it would be in the Premier League. If you look at the top Premier League teams right now, they have to have a quota of homegrown players, but clubs really just reach that quota. They don't, that's most teams, it is these kind of international superstars. And, there's only, I want to say, one or two English managers in the Premier League. It's very heavily international, whereas the League of Ireland is obviously a lot more local, very much grassroots. But Athlone seems nearly more than most, especially on the women's side. And the players who've been there since 2020, especially, such a huge connection and part of the town. And for the, I think there's been three permanent managers of the women's team. So Kieran Kilduff, who just left at the beginning of this season, he wasn't originally from Athlone, but Tommy Hewitt was. And our current manager, Colin Fortune, grew up near St. Mel's, which is the old stadium. He has such a connection to the centre of the town. And you really feel that, not only in kind of the interviews that he gives, but you can feel that when you see him on the touchline and the connection he has between the players on the pitch and the fans in the stand. I spoke to Colin after both matches, actually. And it's so lovely interviewing somebody who I kind of would know to see from around the town. And I think everyone felt the same way. So here's what he had to say about this.
What does it mean kind of being from Athlone and seeing the development of football here and what this night means?
Yeah, it's massive. As an Athlone man, I grew up in the terraces of St. Mel's Park. I know all about the history. I've been at some of them Champions League games before. Gone down through the years. It's absolutely massive. It was a proud moment for me, particularly during injury time, to be able to savour the moment, all the fans standing, clapping, for these players. It's something I'll never forget, and something I'm absolutely delighted to be proud of. And, I'm a very, very proud man tonight.
What I love is that the entire town got behind this team, and it didn't matter that it was a women's team. That sounds weird, but you know what I mean? There's a lot of men that you can speak, and I'm saying men because it is a lot of men who don't watch the women's game because it's not as good or it's slower or whatever the argument is. That didn't matter. They weren't going despite it being the women's team. They were going because it's Athlone Town.
Yeah, and it's... You were mentioning earlier that the men's team aren't doing that great.
No, they are bottom of the first division.
And do you think that has a lot to do with the support that the women's team are getting? Or is it just that they're onto something here, they've got a great team, and the whole town is getting out to support them? Does it have anything to do with the men's team not doing so well? Or do you think if the men were top of the table, the women's team might be, they're doing great, but they wouldn't be getting the support that they are?
I think it's a combination of both. I think people in town recognise that the women's team are doing something extraordinary. And, even if the men's team were top of the Premier Division, a Champions League game in Athlone would always draw a crowd. But I feel like, I can tell you, the average attendance for the Athlone men's team this year is 538. Now, obviously, the Champions League game, which got 1,916, that's not going to be an average figure. You're never going to get that for, they're playing Bowes away this weekend, Athlone Town Women. You're not going to get that many travelling fans up to Daly Mount. But, you're not getting inspiring football from the men's team. And that's an entirely different conversation. And hopefully in the future they can, not start from scratch, but rebuild themselves from the ground up. But what you have is people looking for excitement and inspiration and finding that in the women's team. And here's what I wanted to ask you about, Rachel, because the Camogie All-Ireland finals are when?
Sunday.
Sunday. And we had Brian Malloy, who is the president of the Camogie Association. He was on PM yesterday, on Wednesday. And he had an interesting comment about kind of Camogie versus hurling. Can you explain what that is and what your view is on it?
Yeah, so he came out and said that basically there's four All-Ireland finals and the difference between the attendance is it's not like big ball, small ball, it's gender. Mm. And that if you're going out to support your county's main, like hurling football team, you should be going out to support the women's football or the Camogie team. It's a one that I go back and forth on all the time. And he's getting a lot of stick for it. People are thinking people should want to go to these matches because they support the team, not just because there's women playing. We feel like we ought to go. Mm. You know, it's not like you should be guilting people into going. How many Cork people were looking for tickets to the All-Ireland final that couldn't get them? And how many aren't going to maybe show up on Sunday? He also had the argument about the whole Scorgate that happened. People were enraged. People were engaging on that, commenting on the Munster final being cancelled, but they're not going to show up and watch the Camogie finals. It's such a tricky one. Yeah. You know, I think it's something that needs to just be brought in from the ground up. Like I used to go when that Cork football team was so successful when I was younger, we were always brought on a bus as kids, you know, and it was a highlight of the year. Like it was something you'd really look forward to. But it is such a pity when you see the crowds at All-Ireland finals and the majority of them are kids. It's nice that they're seeing it, but it's a different atmosphere, like you explained earlier, with, you know, it's not the beating of the drums and like the real passionate fans giving out. I don't know where to go with it, really, you know?
It feels like there's not a clear black and white answer to this.
There's not. One thing we have to look at, and it's a completely different conversation itself, but is like the recent Euros. Like, how did they build the success of that? And I know it's a lot of like fan zones, and even the new owner of Athlone Town FC spoke about like you have to create something a little bit more than just the match. And we heard about how marketing the team has helped. But to be fair, the Camogie Association has gotten a lot of stick over the last week saying that they haven't marketed it. They ought to have, you know, they do their comms. I'm not sure what more they can do. They'd have to do something completely different. It's not like they're just not talking about these games. They are. Like they're putting up their tweets. They're putting up their Instagrams. They're doing all their media days. You know, I've been lucky enough to be able to go to a lot of them. And you get such good access to the players, especially in the women's side, that you would compared to the men's. So I don't think it's fair to put the blame on the Camogie Association. But I understand the argument that there's no point in calling for people to fill Croke Park for one day of the year when you're kind of ignoring the rest. You know, that's why you'd go to Croke Park, is because you've followed a team from the very beginning. And my final one on this, sorry, you started me on a tangent and it's a bit dangerous, but do you think because at Lone Town, the success that they're getting is because it's local? You know, they're just travelling down to Athlone. Say one of the big arguments for this weekend is that the senior final is on at 5:15 on a Sunday. Obviously, you want those games to be in Croke Park, but if you're thinking of families travelling from Cork or from the corners of Galway, it's not as accessible. So I don't know if you can compare them like for like, because maybe you're not having to travel as far, and at Lone Town are the only team, you know, whereas in Camogie, say for this weekend, for example, you have your club comes first maybe, and then you're also supporting the county. So it's not exactly comparable.
It is the difference between, you know, a county team and a local team. Like, for example, if there was, if we organised football, like soccer clubs by county, and Westmeath were playing as a county, the county town of Mullingar is a good, you know, 35 minute drive on bad roads.
Yeah.
So you definitely wouldn't get the kind of attendance from Athlone.
Yeah.
To so there.
It's a loaded debate always, and I don't know what the answer to it is, but I know everyone keeps asking, you know, so hopefully people will really start putting their heads together and see what we can do. But it's an example I think we can definitely learn from this, you know, at London FC. Just hopefully that we don't need the men's team to go to shit just for people to support the men's team. That's not the narrative I want to take from it either.
And I think that's what a lot of the supporters club, the Athlone Town Supporters Club, which I'm going to get the exact name of their supporters club because it's named after an old footballer from the county, Dinny Hannan. Yes, Dinny Hannan Supporters Club. And I, you know, and I was at the town forum, Athlone Town Forum, with the new owner on Saturday, and I was talking to some of the lads from the supporters club, and it was really funny. They said, "You're not talking about Athlone," and I said, "I was on Off the Ball Breakfast," and they said, "We only listen to your podcast." Sorry, I was like, "Listen, I'm just glad you're listening to the podcast." But I, you know, they were so passionate about, you know, about their club, about building the atmosphere from the ground up, because it starts with fans. There's only so much that the owners and the players and the manager can do if they haven't engaged the fans. And I think the supporters club now are seeing such engagement, and they're giving it back tenfold. So we were talking to Enda from the Athlone Town Supporters Club, and here's what he had to say on the atmosphere that's been generated.
The whole town has not come together to support the, to support our team like this ever before. Even in FAI Cup finals, even in President's Cup finals, like this Champions League football really kind of united the town together, and everybody knew there was a game on, and everybody wanted the best for the girls, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and you could feel that. I wish you could come to Athlone or could have seen Athlone that last week, because it was, you know, I travelled down from Dublin twice in the span of like 3 days. It was, I spent too much money on trains and I was very, very tired, but I wanted to be around the town to see the atmosphere building, and just to see the fruits of the effort that the supporters club have put in, and that the girls, I mean, these girls on that team, they are unbeaten in the league all season.
Wow.
They are a really force to be reckoned with. It's not like it's this miracle story of, oh my God, they were 4 and 5 years ago and suddenly they're in Europe. It's like, well, no, they are an excellent team filled with some phenomenal players. Like Roisin Molloy scored a brace on Wednesday. Izzy Groves came back from injury to captain her team. She dominated the midfield. On Saturday, Maddie Gibson scored 2 goals direct from a corner. It was just sensational. And to watch it happen and to everyone feed off that energy, it was, I mean, I said this to the manager, Colin Fortune. I said, I've never experienced anything like that. And I'm 23 years old. You have to go back to that older generation who had those European nights in Athlone.
And that was, that's where fan bases are created,
yeah,
isn't it? Like, anyone that was at two of those games, they're going to be looking to go to the next match, you know, no matter yeah. how far you have to travel, because you're going to recreate that atmosphere wherever you go. You mentioned Maddie there.
Mm.
Can you chat to us a little bit about the American influence on this Athlone team? Because yeah. that's something I wouldn't have anticipated. I thought it would be more Irish-based players playing in Ireland, and then you hear of all of, say, our senior women's players maybe going to the UK. So I wasn't anticipating us being the draft country.
No, huge Irish presence in this Athlone team. Like, you have Maddie Gibson, obviously, and I wonder if I have just where in America she's from. But you have Maddie Gibson, who's been here for a couple of years now. You have Kelly Brady, who was signed at the beginning of this year and has taken the league by storm. She was player of the month a few months ago. You know, I think she's hit double digits already, something like 11 goals in the league. Yeah, Kelly Brady, she's born in New York, but she represents Ireland. Like, her parents are from Monaghan in Galway.
Oh, okay.
Which is great. Good for her. And then we have, yes, yeah, Madison Gibson. She is from New Jersey. And so Maddie Gibson is one of these players who I think is a really key example. Like, she studies at the Technical University of the Shannon, which in old money is AIT, although an Institute of Technology. And there is such a connection between college athletes in the US and now Athlone Town. The assistant manager of the women's team is a lovely man named Gordon Brett, and he is the head of sports and recreation at TUS. So there is a very strong connection with US college athletes, and they are coming to this, you know, pretty smallish town in the middle of Ireland.
Don't talk it down that much, Eve. But coming from...
Yeah, from
America,
New Jersey. When I was on Off the Ball Breakfast last week, actually, Ger Gilroy made the very good point. He said if there was around 2,000 people in the stadium for the Cardiff match and there was around 22,000 people in Athlone, you have nearly 10% of the town's population attending that fixture. When you put it like that, it just defies kind of all your expectations.
It does.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about... Again, another thing I would have assumed is that you hear Irish athletes going to college in America. Yes. Whereas this is the reverse. Is like the success of a club like Athlone Town and other women's women's teams in this league, is it going to help keep players here, or do you think there's still a big step to go before we can keep all our homegrown talent in Ireland?
That was the question that I kind of put to the new owner last week, Nick Giannassi. There's a full interview on YouTube with him. But I asked him because he said he's very passionate about developing young players. And I kind of said, OK, what does that mean? Because in the context of the League of Ireland, you make a very good point. Take Mason Melia, for example. He plays for St. Pat's and he has recently been sold to Tottenham Hotspur for $2 million, right? Now, he's not gone yet. I think he's still kind of, you know, we'll buy you and we'll loan you back to your club for a little while. And that £2 million for St. Pat's is huge. The kind of the investment that they can do with that into their stadium, their general running of the club, fees, transfer fees, wages for players, it's huge. Is that what developing players means? That you develop them to a stage where you can then sell them on to Premier League teams, to teams further afield in Europe and get money from that? Or does developing players mean that you get players from different countries like America, or that you get players from your local area? You develop them to the best footballer they could be and they will bring you to success. Someone like Kayleigh Shine or the Brennans who have been with a hometown for so long, that's developing players which are staying and have seen, like, they've reaped the rewards of this, you know?
Yeah, and we had a clip from Bert talking about how important it is to have a group of players that aren't coming and going.
Yeah.
One of the main ones for me would be the fact that we have a very strong core group of players that have been there for years, you know, and they really sort of keep that structure so that it never feels like we're rebuilding. I know we add on players every single year, like the likes of the past strikers that we had in Casey Howe, Brenda in the Katabe, and now obviously Kelly Brady. It feels like we never run out of strikers, really. Like, the scouting has been brilliant over from America, but really what sort of ties it all together is these core players that have been there from, well, the start, really, such as Kayleigh Shine, you know, Shauna Brennan, Kelly Brennan, Roisin Molloy. Like, you know, these players, they grew with this club, you know. Like, I'm sure they never really imagined that they might be in a Champions League qualifiers, making it this far when they first started out, you know.
I think personally what's so incredible about seeing Irish footballers or an Irish footballing team play and trying to reach the highest levels of European football is seeing just how far the women's game has come in Ireland, you know, compared to a few years ago. I know you, Rachel, were doing your homework this morning on sort of the history of the Irish women's national team.
Yeah, and you don't have to go back too far. It would have been one of my earliest memories of being aware of the Ireland's women's national team, which is poor in itself, but it's when they held that press conference back in April 2017 and they were saying that the FAI weren't playing ball with them and they really wanted, you know, equal pay and just the basics, like the very basics, things like access to a nutritionist, gym membership from a squad, being paid the same as the men for an away fixture or just being paid at all. And I think the one that everyone will always remember is that they had to change out of their gear in airport bathrooms because the gear would go back to the kit man and it would be reused either for an underage team or another stage. They weren't even allowed to keep their tracksuits. And that was only 2017.
Yeah, so when you look at how far the women's national team has gone, and we competed in our first World Cup a couple of years ago, and then you see the developments of the League of Ireland, and the standard of the women's game now in Ireland is so high. I mean, that game, the Athlone Town Cardiff game, it was fast-paced, it was electric. Athlone dominated that game, and they were just so exciting to watch. And I don't think you could have envisioned something like that unless those girls had kind of stood up for what they knew to be right and ask for not even special treatment. Like, they were asking for their very, very basic necessities.
It's the bottom triangle of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Exactly. And so I suppose to finish up, I just want to quote from Angelina again, who is such an avid supporter now of this team, having been a part of it originally in 2020. She said, I think the Athlone women's team have done so much for the sport and the town, and that's massively down to passion for the sport and community. Because at the start, what was being asked of the team was professional level football without being paid for it, even though the men's team were being paid. And if I recall correctly, we were doing better than they were. It's so nice to see the team where they are now because they fought tooth and nail to be there, and they are a credit to the town and to themselves.
Nearly choking up with that.
You know, you're seeing someone who's from inside and is now watching from the outside. And I think we can all echo that sentiment. It's fantastic for the players. It's fantastic for the town. And it's fantastic for Irish football as a whole. I don't think, you know, this game, the next game on August 27th, we wish them the best of luck. It was so lovely to be reporting on Athlone Town against European opposition because I didn't even have to pretend to be objective. So that was fantastic.
So, August
27th.
Against
Bray Havik.
I just wanted to hear you give it one more go.
So thank you, Rachel, very much for this. And we have an interesting August lined up for Word on the Street. So because I think, as many people who are listening will also be doing, there's a few of us going on our holidays. Suzanne is off already, and then she's going to be working with the Rugby World Cup, which Team Ireland are, you know, there's been interviews coming back already with the players, are super excited. So we have a bit of a special episode coming out in the next few weeks. Some extra content from the Irish Tennis Open that we hinted at the end of last week about the racket stringers. Now, I don't think you've seen any of this yet, Rachel.
I have not. Yesterday was my first day back after the annual leave, so I'm excited to delve into that.
It was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had the pleasure of having. These lads are fascinating. Roger and Michael and their career as racket stringers. Yeah. Anyway, so that's going to be in the next couple of weeks. Then we're going to have some rugby content and some bonus content as well, but they'll be back kind of regular run-of-the-mill, us yapping about the news in September.
Brilliant.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things on a journey through Latin America.
I'm nervous and police will use tear gas.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
Diverted has been named among Apple Podcasts' best so far list of 2025.
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. All 10 parts are available now for free via Apple Podcasts.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.